Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and CFRC's Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Era McCauley, covering the findings of a report that connects worsening Ontario wildfires to climate change.
Hello, I'm Era McCauley, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today on YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m., or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach out to our news team at news@cfrc.ca. As wildfires continue to spread across Canada and Eastern Ontario recovers from last month's prolonged smoke-related poor air quality effects, a newly released report from World Weather Attribution, a team of researchers from several institutions including the Center for Environmental Policy and the Red Cross Red Crescent Climate Center, is highlighting the impact of climate change on Canada's environment, safety, and health. The group is raising the alarm over the fact that across Canada, approximately 94% of the total area burned this season occurred during a five-week period between the end of June and end of July, fueled by extreme heat, dry conditions, and strong winds, with further fires sparked by lightning storms. Although the 2026 wildfire season, which starts on April 1st in Ontario, began slow, above-average temperatures and dry weather in late June and through July has resulted in 687 fires to date, already a 55% increase over 2025, which saw 442 wildfires, and well above the 10-year average of 481 fires in the province. Extreme heat is a growing concern, and the City of Kingston declared July 15th Extreme Heat Awareness Day this year after a proposal from a local chapter of Seniors for Climate Action Now brought further attention to the issue locally. According to the Canadian Wildland Fire Information System, nearly 3.9 million hectares of wildland have burned during this year's wildfire season, prompting the Government of Canada to institute National Preparedness Level 4, indicating wildland fire behavior is significant, the demand for resources is high through the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center, and the potential for emerging significant wildland fires is expected to continue or increase the demand on resources. While the KFLNA region has experienced relief from the significant smoke experienced last month, forecasts caution that another warm, dry spell is on the horizon, meaning the potential for more wildfire smoke making its way to Kingston is still high. The World Weather Attribution worked with scientists from Canada, the U.S., and Europe to complete the report, which also highlighted the disproportionate impact of fires on Indigenous communities, who tend to be overrepresented in wildfire areas and often situated in remote communities, which makes evacuation more challenging. The threat of wildfire and the need to evacuate has both physical and mental health impacts on those living in threatened areas, while devastation of forest area disrupts access to hunting grounds and areas of cultural significance. Even in more urban areas, the threat of fire to properties and to public health is high, especially as resources are stretched thin. Smoke from the fires can travel over hundreds of kilometers and cause severe and often delayed health impacts. According to the WWA report, exposure to elevated concentrations of wildfire smoke has been associated with increased emergency health care use, particularly from respiratory and cardiovascular conditions ranging from difficulty breathing to cardiac arrest, as well as increases in all-cause mortality. The report points to human-induced climate change, saying it has increased both the likelihood and intensity of the weather conditions at the time of fires. Research in 2023 found that Quebec's severe start to the fire season was made 7 times more likely due to human-caused climate change, and the WWA states that a growing body of peer-reviewed research has established that climate change is driving the increasing severity of extreme Canadian fire seasons, with a 1.4 degree increase in temperature, making the likelihood of rapidly developing and spreading fires 3.5 times more likely. The report encourages Canada to sustain an effective response through the remainder of the fire season through interagency coordination, flexible deployment of personnel and equipment across jurisdictions, and ensuring sufficient surge capacity to respond to new large fires without compromising ongoing operations. Looking forward, they recommend an integrated risk management approach, including incorporating future fire risk into timber harvest allocations and improving forest resilience after fires occur by diversifying with less flammable tree species. 137 fires are active in Northeast and Northwest Ontario as of today, with 18 forest fires in Northwest Ontario considered not under control at this time. Across Canada, 638 fires are now active, with 124 deemed out of control. The Southeast Public Health Region suggests the following advice to protect yourself during poor air quality events. Everyone is at risk for health impacts related to poor air quality. However, health risks are greatest for infants and children, older adults, those living in high air pollution areas, people living with chronic illnesses such as asthma, diabetes, heart or lung diseases, people who are pregnant, people who are underhoused or experiencing homelessness, people who work outdoors, or people participating in strenuous sports and outdoor activities. If you are experiencing symptoms such as increased coughing, throat irritation, headaches, or shortness of breath, consider reducing or rescheduling strenuous outdoor activity until the air quality improves. As smoke levels rise, so do health risks. Take protective measures to protect yourself and others from the effects of wildfire smoke. Reduce or reschedule strenuous activities outdoors, especially if you experience symptoms such as coughing and throat irritation. When indoors, keep windows and doors closed as much as possible. Protect your indoor air from wildfire smoke by using a clean, high-quality air filter in your ventilation system and/or a certified portable air cleaner that can filter fine particles. If you must spend time outdoors, a well-fitting NIOSH-certified N95 respirator or equivalent may help reduce your exposure to harmful fine particles. Masks can reduce your exposure to the fine particles in smoke, but do not reduce exposure to gases. Watch for symptoms of smoke exposure. Mild and common symptoms of smoke exposure include sore and watery eyes, runny nose and sinus irritation, scratchy throat and mild coughing, and headache. Severe symptoms of smoke exposure include shortness of breath, wheezing, including asthma attacks, severe coughing, dizziness, chest pains, and heart palpitations. Seek medical attention if you develop severe symptoms.
Thank you, Era. Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, that provides additional details on the approval of an expansion for Napanee's Atura Power Station.
Thank you, Jesse. Internal Ministry of the Environment, Conservation and Parks records obtained through Ontario's Freedom of Information process shows ministry officials approved the expansion of Atura Power's Napanee Generating Station. Despite acoustic modeling that predicted one startup operating scenario would exceed the applicable provincial noise criterion before proposed mitigation measures were implemented, the records provide new insight into the ministry's technical review leading to the environmental compliance approval issued on December 22, 2025, and they expand upon issues first raised publicly in June 2026 when the Kingstonist reported on an environmental bill of rights application seeking changes to the approval's noise-related conditions. That application argued the approval could allow certain permanent noise mitigation measures to be delayed until 2038 while the expanded generating station continued operating. On Tuesday, August 4, 2026, the ministry declined to undertake the requested review, concluding that the concerns either had been considered during the approval process or were addressed through conditions contained in the environmental compliance approval, including acoustic audits, a noise abatement action plan, and prescribed noise control measures. The newly released internal records obtained by the Kingstonist offer the clearest picture yet of how ministry officials reached that decision. According to the ministry's technical review, acoustic modeling predicted a sound level of 41 decibels at one point of reception, identified as POR1A, during one startup operating scenario. The applicable provincial criterion at that location was 40 decibels before mitigation measures were implemented. While one decibel difference would generally be difficult for most people to perceive, the 40 decibel criterion criterion represents the applicable provincial standard for that receptor under the modeled operating conditions. The ministry nevertheless concluded the acoustic assessment report complied with Ontario's NPC 300 environmental noise guideline. The noise abatement action plan outlined in the ministry's review establishes a phased process beginning after construction of the expansion. The first phase requires a post-construction acoustic audit to determine whether the expanded facility complies with provincial noise limits during an actual operation. If the audit demonstrates compliance with the limits, the remaining phases of the plan do not proceed. However, if the audit identifies an exceedance of the limits, the records contemplate approximately 6 months to gather engineering information, 2 years of detailed design and budgeting, and 7 years of procurement and installation of permanent noise controls, followed by a final post-mitigation acoustic audit. Those timelines are reflected in the environmental compliance approval itself, which allows up to 13 years from the date of approval for the listed permanent noise control measures to be completed. The ministry's technical review does not explain why a phased implementation schedule extending up to 13 years was considered appropriate. Freedom of Information Act records also provide additional context surrounding ministry oversight of the facility during the approval process. An internal request for investigation worksheet prepared 6 days before the environmental compliance approval was issued indicates the ministry opened an investigation relating to possible noise impacts to a nearby resident and allegations that some installed noise barriers were shorter than described in the acoustic assessment report submitted with the approval application. The worksheet also identifies Atura as a repeat non-compliant violator, notes that victims may have been impacted, and records that the investigation had been approved. The document is an internal screening record. It does not determine whether any regulatory violations occurred. Separate Freedom of Information Act records include correspondence documenting resident complaints that describe continuous humming, mechanical vibration, loud bursts, and sleep disruption. The records also show that in a separate compliance matter, a provincial officer's order required Atura to address cooling tower fogging after ministry officials concluded recurring fog events posed an unacceptable risk to motorists traveling along County Road 33. That order required interim measures within weeks and a longer-term plan to eliminate fogging impacts on the roadway. Atura Power insisted that the Napanee station operates in compliance with all applicable environmental approvals and regulatory requirements. The company added that it remains committed to health and safety of all employees, neighbors, and the environment. Atura did not directly address questions regarding the modeled pre-mitigation noise level, the rationale for the phased noise abatement action plan, the implementation timeline, the role of financial planning, the status of the Phase 1 acoustic audit, or the ministry records relating to resident noise complaints. The ministry requested additional time to respond, citing staff being on vacation. Despite an extension of the deadline, the Ministry of the Environment, Conservation and Parks did not respond by the time of publication.
Thank you to Dinah Jansen and Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, about the OPP Detachment Board's annual report to Loyalist Township Council.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
The East Lennox and Addington OPP Detachment Board marked 2025 as an important year as they presented their annual report to Loyalist Township Council. Community representative for Loyalist Township and the town of Greater Napanee, Jessica Jones, provided council with an overview of the work the board did in 2025.
Overall, 2025 was an important year for East Lennox and Addington OPP Detachment Board. Much of our work has been about establishing the board, putting the necessary governance pieces in place, completing our training and developing the processes and relationships that will allow us to effectively represent our municipalities and communities going forward. As we continue to develop, our focus will remain on ensuring that the communities we represent have a meaningful voice in policing priorities, and that we continue to foster a strong collaborative relationship between our municipalities, our residents, and the OPP.
Jones detailed how they've worked to establish the board.
Because this is still a relatively new board under the Community Safety and Policing Act, a significant portion of our work has involved establishing the governance structure necessary for the board to operate effectively, which includes a lot of bylaws and policies that are just the foundational work for the board moving forward. That's included developing and adopting our bylaws and policies in areas such as remuneration, misconduct, and conflict of interest, as well as communications and information sharing. And while governance is an important part of our mandate, ultimately our work comes back to community safety and policing. Our role is to ensure that there's a strong connection between the communities we represent and the OPP, providing policing services to them. And that community needs and priorities continue to be a part of those conversations.
Jones further explains the role of the board.
The East Lennox and Addington OPP Detachment Board represents the four municipalities served by our OPP detachment: Addington Highlands Township, the Town of Greater Napanee, Loyalist Township, and Stone Mills Township. Our role is one of civilian governance and community representation. We work collaboratively with the OPP Detachment Commander to provide guidance and advice regarding policing services and to help ensure that policing priorities and initiatives reflect the needs of the communities we represent. An important part of that role is supporting community safety while also promoting transparency and accountability and helping to maintain a positive relationship between the OPP and the communities that it serves. Our inaugural meeting was held on November 14th, 2024, and our meeting records are publicly available. We've also made the decision to rotate our meetings amongst the four municipalities represented by the board, which we think is very important. Although we operate as one detachment board, we represent four distinct municipalities, and each with its own community, geography, priorities, and policing needs.
Jones spoke about members on the board and their training.
Our board is made up of six members, providing both municipal and community representation across those four municipalities. Here in Loyalist, Mayor Hagedorn serves as our council's representative, and I have the privilege of serving as the joint community representative for Loyalist Township and Greater Napanee. Our other members include Councillor Bob Norrie representing Greater Napanee, Councillor Sherry Milligan representing Stone Mills, Tina Marie Chamberlain as the community representative for Addington Highlands and Stone Mills, and Tony Fritsch, who's now representing the Addington Highlands Council. All six board members have also completed prescribed training developed by the Ministry of the Solicitor General, and it covered areas including police governance, policing in Ontario, the roles and responsibilities of the detachment boards, and requirements relating to board appointments, training, codes of conduct, and conflicts of interest. While some of that work is not necessarily the most visible part of what we do, it has been an important part of establishing a strong foundation for the board and ensuring that we can carry out our responsibilities appropriately and effectively.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the importance of community representatives on the board.
We are very fortunate with the residents' representatives that we've got on the board. Very engaged, very knowledgeable, and they certainly do represent the residents very well, I believe.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Now over to the LGAI reporter for CJPE County FM in Picton, Brenda Little, for a story on affordable housing challenges and projects in Prince Edward County.
Affordable housing is a hot topic everywhere, but rural municipalities have unique challenges when it comes to government assistance. Larger metropolises are in the spotlight, leaving the smaller communities in the shadows, where the tax base is considerably less and the need for affordable housing is a growing concern for the sustainability of the communities. Prince Edward County Affordable Housing Corporation held a housing summit on Monday where senior government officials MP Millette and MPP Alsop accompanied developers and board members to see firsthand several of the affordable housing sites. They met for discussion later where developers outlined their projects and spoke of the challenges. Affordable Housing Supervisor Ella Siegler tells us more. Ellis, what are the challenges for affordable housing these days?
Well, it's a matter of trying to catch up because the senior levels of government, the province and the federal government, have been out of housing, directly funding housing creation since the 80s in any big way. For both private and nonprofit housing developers, it costs exactly the same amount of money to build a market rate unit versus an affordable unit. So this particular housing summit was about trying to find ways to leverage and to get the critical mass we need to get the attention of senior levels of government, because in Prince Edward County, we're not a big city, we're not Ottawa, we're not Toronto, we're not Kingston, we're not even Belleville. So finding ways to do that collectively.
So the MP and the MPP were here, as well as developers. You had quite a variety of people here today.
Well, we generally wanted to educate each other and also to show the provincial and federal representatives the opportunities and challenges and demonstrate the need for housing. We're only with the units that we toured today, it's at 19% of the target of affordable housing that was set by council based on data that we had. So, you know, there's a definite need and just trying to amp up the volume and get their attention.
Were you happy with the outcome today? And is there anything that you can tell us going forward?
Well, one of the reasons that we had the summit was so that the Housing Corporation and effectively the municipality could review, do a deeper dive in environmental scan. The Housing Corporation is updating its business plan, so this was part of that. And also, as an entity and as a region, looking for opportunities to collaborate. So I would say, based on the conversations that we've had and the tour and in the meeting, I think we've certainly started initiating it and got people really thinking about potential solutions.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with the Kingston Sports Report, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays.
Thank you, Dinah. Today's sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays shines the spotlight on an upcoming preseason football game here in the city of Kingston. The reigning and defending Yates Cup champion Queens Golden Gaels will host the Laval Rouge A Or for the first time in 16 seasons in a preseason game to be played at Richardson Memorial Stadium. This marks the first official preseason game for the Gaels since 2023, when they traveled to Montreal to play the McGill Redbirds in the rekindling of one of Canada's oldest football rivalries. This game, though it may be in the preseason, is an interesting indicator of the internal expectations for the Gaels, as they are hosting one of the very best football teams in the country, a team that took the eventual Vanier Cup champion Montreal Carabins to the absolute limit in last year's Jacques Dussault Cup final, losing 31-29. Laval was the only team to really challenge Montreal en route to their national title victory, so this is quite a declaration from the Gaels. This is clearly where they feel they rank amongst the country's best. And once again, although this is a preseason game with functionally zero stakes, it will be very interesting to see how the Gaels match up to this perennial powerhouse. This game will not be broadcast on OUA TV, but you can tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca at 2:45 p.m. to catch the CFRC Power Plays pregame show ahead of the scheduled 3 p.m. kickoff. Tickets are also available for purchase, $10 if bought online in advance of the game, $15 at the door at Richardson Memorial Stadium. Once again, that is Saturday, August 22nd at 3 p.m. And bear in mind, the official regular season opener is the following weekend, Sunday, August 30th at 7 p.m. in Toronto against the Varsity Blues. But you can tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM at 6 p.m. to catch an extra long pregame show brought to you by CFRC Power Plays.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that update, and also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, August 18th. Daytime high of 25 degrees, feeling closer to 28 with a mix of sun and cloud and a slight 25% chance of precipitation into the afternoon. Wednesday, August 19th. 24 is your high, feeling closer to 26. Quite humid with a 60% chance of rain in the afternoon. Thursday, August 20th. 22 is your high, actually feeling a little bit cooler, around 20 degrees, with a 57% chance of rain in the morning. Once that clears up, it'll still be a fairly cloudy and breezy day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, August 21st, 23 is your high, feeling closer to 25 with lots of sunshine. Saturday, August 22nd, 22 is your high, feeling closer to 26. Sunny conditions, perfect weather to come and check out the Queens versus Laval preseason football game at Richardson Stadium, kicking off at 3 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd, 23 is your high, mix of sun and cloud, feeling closer to 27 degrees. And then kicking off the start of next week, Monday, August 24th, 23 is your high with a 56% chance of rain in the morning. Otherwise, it's going to be mostly cloudy conditions here in the city of Kingston.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.